Everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
In this episode, we're covering another live action, but I had to do it in air quotes, remake. It was 1955 when the adaptation of Lady and the Tramp came out, and 2019's the live action remake.
What do you mean the adaptation?
So, I'm just looking at it. The adaptation for Lady and the Tramp was from the Cosmopolitan magazine, Happy Dan and the Cynical Dog.
Where are you getting that info from?
Wikipedia, the page that I've got wide open right now.
Because Lady and the Tramp was originally pitched, or not the story itself, but the kind of general concept was originally pitched in the 1930s. By an animator who was working on Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, who drew pictures of his own Cocker Spaniel. And then they said, we don't want to make this movie. And they wouldn't let him make it. And then, like, almost 20 years later, long after he'd left the company, they found the drawings in the archives and went, ooh, we can do something with this.
Was the guy's name Ward Green?
I think so, yes. Okay,
because he wrote Happy Dan and the Cynical Dog.
Yes.
Okay.
No, hang on. Sorry, no. I have got a note about Ward Green as well. Joe Grant was the guy.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. But he then. Yeah, you're right. He read that short story.
Right.
And he bought the rights to it. Then
buying a thing means you invented it.
So that was no. So he wrote Thomas Edison. So he did write a story. He wrote a storyboard based on his dog, and they went, we don't want to make this film. And then he read the short story by Ward Green called Happy Dan the Whistling Dog 6 years later. So it was 1937 originally, so 6 years later, 1943, he bought the rights to that film for Disney, or to that story, and they still didn't want to make it. And then it was in 1949, after he'd left the studio, that they found his stuff and went, ooh, let's make a movie out of this. So then he never got any credit for it.
Classic Hollywood, classic yeah. Disney.
He finally got acknowledgement on the Platinum Edition DVD in 2006 for something he did in the 1930s and 1940s.
I did like, getting into the movies.
Yes.
I did like the fact that they kept the time period semi-similar.
Mm.
I didn't realize the original was set in Georgia. It was in the South somewhere along those lines.
I don't know if it is. I feel like the original is not really specified where it's set, right? But the remake is filmed in Georgia, and I think it's supposed to be set in New Orleans, from what I understand. In Louisiana. Why are you looking at me like that?
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember which state those trees are really famous for.
Well, the actual filming location is Savannah, Georgia.
Okay.
Which is my favorite town in the United States of America.
I thought you were going to say my favorite tree.
Savannah is not a tree.
No, I'm just saying that those trees.
Right.
The trees with the, like, very southern feel to them with the... Because there's, like, another plant that grows on them that creates that, like, sort of, like, cobwebby look.
What are they, like, wisteria or something?
Yeah, something along those lines. Well, we're not here to talk about trees.
No.
We're here to talk about movies and unnecessary adaptations. Because unlike one of our previous episodes, Aladdin, there was nothing in my mind watching that movie. Because this is the first time I saw live action. Mm-hmm. That was improved on.
Yeah, that's the sad thing about it. Is that... Like, you know, on its own, it's all right.
Yeah.
But it doesn't hold up to the original at all. It loses the charm.
Yeah.
You know, it changes a lot. Like, it's like, it kind of does, like, scene for scene in a lot of moments, and then it makes changes. And I understand why it's making the changes, certainly in some aspects, because there are questionable things in the original.
Oh, boy.
but... the changes are just lacking something. Like, they could have done something much better with them. You know what I mean? They could have made, like, they could have done so. Like, for example, the Cats, the musical number that they replace
the problematic
there is a problematic musical number
yeah.
with some racial stereotypes in the original movie because it did come out in the 1950s.
Yeah.
And in the remake, they replace the breed of cat and they change the song into a weird jazz half-spoken song that's not good, but also isn't a good introduction to the Cats either. And it's just kind of, it just falls flat for me.
It's still better than the...
I think it would have been extremely problematic if they put in... if they had put in the original song there. But they needed something... Because, I mean, here's the thing about that song. It's still catchy.
Yeah.
it's a catchy song. I already don't remember the song from the remake.
I had completely forgotten that song up until that moment.
Yeah.
And I was like... I'm pretty sure I sang this all the time as a child.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I played it on piano. Like, I had that in a piano book and learned to play a song on piano. It is definitely, you know, and it's the same with any of the movies from that era. Like, if you watch Dumbo, there's some suspicious things in Dumbo.
Yeah.
You know, it was a different era.
We're not defending it. We're just saying that we're bringing awareness to... the fact that these are the problems that needed to be changed with these things.
Yeah, I understand. I am 100% behind changing
100%.
Things like that. Like, 1,000% behind it.
110%.
110%. That's bad math. Children, I'm 100%, because that's the maximum you can be, behind changing those things that have aged badly.
Yeah.
I would not be behind taking them out of the original, like editing it to cut those out.
Yeah.
I think we should preserve that as it is, with the acknowledgement of, hey, some of this is a product of its time.
Didn't we watch that weird Mr. Magoo movie as well?
That's strange.
Because they had a giant warning at the beginning of that movie.
Yeah, well, all these, I don't know if they still do, but all these movies did have a warning on Disney Plus. I know that it is something that is being removed due to
current political
things climate, that we won't go into. So they do put a warning saying, hey, this is how it was made. This is a reflection of the time. Some of this is not appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand totally taking those out of a remake. But I just think you needed something at least of equal value. Because then you replace it with, or else just cut it out. Because that's the other option, is just cut it. Because they changed the whole story anyway.
Yeah.
Because in the original, Jim, Deer, and Darling go away and they leave Aunt Sarah looking after the baby. And Aunt Sarah then is upset that there's a dog there as well, because she doesn't like dogs, she doesn't care about the dog. She sees a dog. Aunt Sarah doesn't seem to be afraid of Lady, but to some extent treats her the way my dad treats dogs. My dad, for the record, my dad is very afraid of dogs. I think he's gotten better with age. He's like, you know, met some nice dogs in his later in his life, but he had some trauma around it. It's not, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. But he does kind of joke sometimes about it. Like, he bigs up his own fear.
Yeah.
To the point that we were in a bookshop and someone had brought in their Shih Tzu. And my dad was like, there's a savage beast in this bookshop. And I was like, what? And I turned around and it's this very tiny little dog. And I feel like that's what Aunt Sarah's doing. She's like, this dog is a beast. It's in the room with the child and that's not acceptable. We need to put a muzzle on her. We need to, you know.
Yeah.
Lock her to her cage.
Literally in the cast, she is Aunt Sarah, Darling's aunt who dislikes dogs and prefers cats.
Yeah, and that's her whole kind of just like demographic that she is. But in the original, so she's coming to look after the baby, she's looking after the baby, and then she doesn't want Lady to be around because she thinks dogs can't be trusted around babies. And then, you know, and then she gets her muzzled and Lady runs away with the muzzle and because Lady has her collar on, she gets returned to the house, and Aunt Sarah then, you know, locks her to her dog, her kennel, and you know, the Jim Deere and Darling only come home at the climax of the movie where Lady hasn't been able to stop a rat from getting in and Tramp has to go in instead, and Aunt Sarah thinks he's attacking the baby because she has this, you know, fear of dogs. And in the remake, they don't leave the baby with Aunt Sarah, so they just invite Aunt Sarah over to dog sit without telling her that she's coming over to dog sit, even though she hates dogs.
Yeah.
Aunt Sarah then immediately, like, overreacts in weird ways to the dog, like, way more extreme than she does in the original, and then brings her to get muzzled, but is like, the dog catcher's, or the pet shop owner is not wanting to muzzle her, and she's not showing any signs of needing to be muzzled, and then Aunt Sarah, like, is insistent on, like, pointing out what she wants and things like that. And then she runs off. And then Jim Deere and Darling pick her up. And then they have her back with the baby. And they're home with the baby. And it kind of changes the whole story. Because then at that point, you know, what, like, there's no Aunt Sarah afraid of dogs who's going to assume the worst of the dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that whole thing is cut out. And yet, for some reason, Jim Deere and Darling do it. And it just messes up the whole story. But if you were going to do that anyway, you could just as easily just cut out the cats because they don't add anything.
Yeah.
Because at that point, what's the point of the cats?
I guess it's the catalyst to Aunt Sarah losing Lady in the street.
But that's because she's getting her muzzled. Yeah. And in the remake, she's already just like being extreme about being around a dog to begin with. You could just as easily have her just bring the dog to get muzzled.
I tell you, there was one part that I found funny that was in the remake that wasn't in the original.
Mm-hmm.
It was when they go to Tony's restaurant.
Yeah, it's
because it
the
is,
whole thing is more, it feels more extreme. And I guess they leaned into it when you have it, like, because when it's animated, it's all cute, they're all friends, humans and the dogs. And when you see it and it's like dogs, and you think about the concept that it's this Italian restaurant where they're serving dog spaghetti.
Yeah. The part that was hilarious to me was, both movies, you know, Tramp rocks up and he's like, hey, look, this is how you get food. You go up to these restaurants and, like, do you feel like Italian? And he scratches on the thing and then they come out and they, you know, give them food and serenade them. And it's like, you know, the very, very... kind of, it's now a trope and appears in lots of things. The spaghetti kissing part.
The part that Walt Disney hated and wanted cut out of the movie and then ended up being the most iconic part of the movie.
The part that made me laugh in the 2019 version is he orders Lady and the Tramp the special.
Yeah.
And they're eating it and there's a couple of customers inside the restaurant look out the window and see what's happening. And they're like, oh, I thought they were out of the special. And it's just like, not like the, why are the hell are the chefs serenading these random dogs? Why have I not got my food? It's more of like the dog's eating what I wanted to order.
Yeah, I love that. It's, and I feel like it highlights the absurdity of it. Yeah. Like, they keep, in that moment, they're keeping the joy and also highlighting the absurdity of it. And I think that's very cute.
Yeah.
I
think the other part that was missing is at the end of the night when Lady and the Tramp have been out in the animated, they go to, like, it's kind of almost, again, like the trope of make out point, but it's not because it's like this romantic overlook over the town.
Yeah.
As the moon's rising and the sun's set. And in the original animated, there's other couples there. And it is very much like they're just experiencing, like, what everybody else does, and it's all very romantic.
Yeah.
In the live action, they're alone.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, oh, then it's a morning instantly, and there's not as much of, like, a, you know, love's in the air, and it's a very much like a communal meeting place of, like, everybody whose lovers all meet on this thing, and it just, it felt bizarre to me that they were just like, nah, just them on top of a hill.
I just suddenly thought about the fact that I think we're going to be in Italy when this episode releases. So we could be eating spaghetti. We could be Lady in the Tramping with some spaghetti.
I will push a meatball to your side of the plate. A vegan meatball. Yeah. and then we'll both end up in police custody, and because you're a EU citizen and I'm not, you'll be released and I'll be executed.
I don't think that's how the movie ended,
I'm pretty sure that's...
I don't think that's what would happen. I want to know what your thoughts are on the dog catcher as a character.
In the original or remake?
In both.
There's... I could go into the era of the time and the sort of implications that you could draw on history of what happened in Europe and how people were, like, hunted for to be put away in prison, and how there's a little bit of that going on because obviously Tramp is one of our heroes in the story. And the dog catcher is very much in a uniform and trying to police this town and get undesirables locked away to the point where the people are like, no, you can't put your sign on my window kind of material. Like, it's all very much the sort of the first wave of the invasion of Germany and blah, blah, blah. And I could get into that. As like a thing. But I feel like the reality of the situation in the remake is here is an individual who is doing their job. Their job isn't glamorous. Their job isn't what others in society would be like. Oh yeah, if I was making a society, of course there'd be dog catchers. Like, that's a necessary part of society. And I feel like in the live action movie, there is more emphasis on the character of the dog catcher than there is in the original. And he is sort of like an overarching bad guy villain, but the reality is he's not really the villain. The villain is, spoilers, obviously, and for people who weren't paying attention very much into the movie, the villain in the entire thing is the lack of funding that goes into protecting animals, because the reason Tramp is so against being in the, like, being caged in with the family, the reason he is astray is because he was abandoned.
Yeah.
He had a family. He was abandoned, ended up living on the streets. Yeah. That's why he's the way he is with his personality. The real villain is the fact that city councils, and this is worldwide, obviously it's better in some areas than it is in others, don't put enough spending on sort of, not like, you know, rehabilitation, but just on the care of these animals, because it's not their choice to be living on the street. And 90% of the time when animals are rescued and there is some sort of social media spotlight put on those animals are adopted.
Yeah.
The real victim in the entire thing is Tramp, and the real villain is the fact that we don't, as taxpayers, as ratepayers, we don't, not enough money is allocated to cleaning our streets of animals in the not euthanasia part, but in the rehome and re-establishment, and, you know, if they have to go live on, like, I'm not saying go live on a farm upstate, because that is a euphemism for your dog died. Sorry for everyone who just realized that. But yeah, that's
unless kids, maybe your dog did go live on a farm upstate. I ask your parents. It might be true. It might not be true.
But that's my point. That's how the dog catcher is a tool in a system that is broken. He is the turnkey in a system that is broken.
Okay. I was just going to say, I thought that they really made him more cartoonish in the remake than in the original. Because the original, he very much was just a guy doing his job. And in the remake, it's like they hammed up Javert from Les Mis, who's hunting someone down with a passion because he stole a loaf of bread 20 years ago. which is, because, like, why is he obsessed with Tramp? But on the points that you're making, I think the movie 100% agrees with you.
Yeah.
I think if people have listened to our 101 Dalmatians episode, after both the release of the original 101 Dalmatians animated film and the release of the 90s live-action remake, adoptions of Dalmatians or purchases of Dalmatians because they are a purebred dog they skyrocketed, and then those dogs got abandoned and put into shelters because people couldn't look after them properly.
Yeah.
When Lady and the Tramp, the 1955 animated movie, released, adoptions of Cocker Spaniels went up.
Yeah.
I don't have figures to say that they weren't treated well, but I do know that Cocker Spaniels, that Spaniels in general, come with a whole slew of health issues.
Yeah.
King Charles Spaniels definitely, in particular, have a lot of health issues.
Any purebred dogs aren't really purebred, they're just inbred.
Yes.
And what happens is the genetic defects that they are recessive genes become dominant genes, and that's why... there's a person at the moment who's trying to unbreed pugs back to what they used to be.
And they look great. Yeah. And they can breathe.
They can breathe.
And that's what we should be aiming for, not this.
And it's sad because squishy faced dogs are my favorite.
They are very cute.
Yeah.
But
they also snore like I do.
Yeah.
Which means they can't breathe.
But this is the same way I feel about cats in New Zealand, in that I love cats. I love having cats. I love being around cats. I love seeing cats on the street. But I'm 100% in support of de-sexing all cats so that we don't have more cats here, because it's not good for our ecosystem.
Yeah.
But anyway, what I was saying was the remake, the live action remake in 2019, and I will say live action remake because I know you're going to talk about CGI and there's definitely something happening with CGI, but they are real dogs.
Yeah.
So they have cast real dogs in all these dog roles. Majority of which were shelter dogs. Most of the dogs in that film are shelter dogs.
That's good.
And all of the ones who were shelter dogs were adopted before the film was released. And also, they really make a point of talking about how important it is. And I mean, it is kind of touched on in the original, you know, this idea how important it is to be licensed and to you know, owned and things like that. But in the remake, they really touch on how the dog pound that they're going to, you know, kind of divides dogs into the adoptable dogs
and the unadoptable,
dogs. And the unadoptable dogs end up going to, you know, down the one-way room, as they call it, and are never seen again. And that happens in both versions of the movie. But in the remake, they really do stress the idea of adopting. It's very much a whole movie about, you know, the concept of adopt, don't shop.
Yeah.
The whole way through it, they're promoting the adoption of dogs. They're showing how much happier the dogs are when they are adopted. They're showing, you know, how these dogs who are in kennels, in pounds, are wanting a family, you know? And you have the dogs who seem like they're happy to be stray, but then at the end of the movie, they're being adopted and they're delighted and they've had to steal scraps to survive, and now they've got an owner who just goes to the butcher and buys them treats. And there's just such a huge emphasis on it. And I think that's great that they did that. And I think that's really recognizing the impact of these films. I think that they're looking back at their history and going, when we've released films about dogs before, we've contributed too much to, you know, these industries of purebred dogs, and we've contributed to puppy farms, we've contributed to dogs ending up going to places where they probably can't handle them and they might get euthanized. And it's wonderful that they've recognized that in their past films and said, hey, what's the message we can put in this one? And the message is, go to a shelter, find a dog, even one that might otherwise be deemed unadoptable, you know, one that's not super cute, one that's not a pure breed. You know, go and find a dog that's the right dog for you, who's a dog that's already out there, already needs a home, and give a home to that dog. And I think that's really a really nice message. And I think that's, you know, touches on what you were saying about, you know, the rehabilitation of dogs that are on the street. Because part of that is that, you know, like in this, there's no funding to actually keep those dogs alive if they're not being adopted. And that's what's happening in the movie, that, you know, he's caught them and they're in this dog pound, but some, they're overcrowding. Like, it's very full. And some of the dogs have been there a long time, can't be adopted. And then, you know, there is a next step. And the next step, unfortunately, is that that dog doesn't get to live anymore.
It's interesting because there's two little points I want to make on that. First off, obviously, Finding Nemo, beloved movie by all who have seen it, did awful for the wild populations of clownfish for obvious reasons, because everyone was like, I want a clownfish, and they all went to the pet store and got clownfish, and clownfish, you know, then were like, the distributors were like, we need more clownfish, and then obviously people went out and got more clownfish. The other thing that I wanted to talk about was, I watched an interview recently with one of the co-founders of PETA.
Right.
And highlight was made on the fact that they euthanize more animals than they save.
Yes.
And the lady, in her defense, was that's because we operate in very low decile areas.
Yep.
And that is actually the contributing factor,
mm-hmm.
is the fact that all these dogs and cats and animals that get abandoned end up in these very low decile area controlled facilities by PETA.
Yeah.
And that's why they all end up being, that's why their numbers of adoption are much lower.
Yeah.
And that's actually the sad part. And it's like, well, you know, why is that? And it's like, well, because nobody else operates in those areas.
Yeah.
It is either they're on the street or they're with us. There are no other options.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Because I've always been a little bit iffy about big organizations who are like that group.
Yeah. And I think that group in particular, they do have some practices.
Oh, their marketing, their marketing department is 1 8-ball away from like fully Looney Tunes. Like,
yeah,
they don't know who's signing off on the things they keep doing.
Yeah, they definitely have a lot of problems, but, and you know, it's good to hear an explanation for one of them, though it is still sad that it's happening.
Yeah.
And like that, you know, some of that is, you know, these dogs getting abandoned, as you say, and probably
pets in general getting abandoned.
Yeah, I was gonna say probably similarly to the, you know, feral cat population, it's that those pets haven't even been, you know, haven't been neutered or spayed before they get abandoned either. So then they're going out and having, you know, having puppies, and
that's
what happens to them.
Yeah,
you know,
there was always a bush full of kittens that I would always find during that time of the year. Like, every year I'd end eventually, because I was always around and about.
What are you talking about? You just, like, started mid-topic. What time of year? Where?
When I was a kid.
Oh, when you were a kid.
When I was a kid.
What time? You said at that time of year, well, there was always
the time that spring, I guess? I don't know. I don't know how the reproductive cycle of cats works. I've always had spayed and neutered cats. But no, I always, like, I don't say always, like, every bush I looked under had an entire, like, civilization of cats. But I always used to find a mum and stray cats, and the mum would hiss at you, and the kittens would be like, what the hell is that thing? I want to go near it.
Yeah, I've never done that, but I have found a pregnant cat, and her kittens are still living with my parents, and they are 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
So turning 13 this year. Yeah, because we did adopt two kittens, but they were, like, from someone around, you know, who lived nearby who had a litter of kittens. And then after those cats, one of them sadly got, ran out our front door and got run down on the road, on the same day that my grandfather had a heart attack on Christmas Eve. So it was a bad time.
That's some gremlins level right there.
And the other one we had for a few years, and then she wandered off one day and never came back, and we never found out what happened to her. And so we said, you know, we live on a main road, we're not going to get cats anymore. And then we've had many cats over the years, but all of them were stray cats who were hungry and needed someone to feed them. And then we're like, these people will look after me, and move themselves into their home.
Yeah.
The mother of those kittens in particular had the kittens in our garden, And then my brother left a window open one day while he was out of the house, and she snuck the kittens in one at a time through an open window, brought them up two flights of stairs to the attic, and hid them in a shelf of Beanie Babies.
I will put you with the rest of them.
Yeah, animals. You were camouflaged with these small animals.
That's an ET level of camouflage right there.
Yeah. So so that's, you know, that's how we got those cats. And those are the cats that we still have, you know, my parents still have. It was a litter of five, and two of them got adopted by people we knew. The other three stayed with my parents. One of them sadly passed away last year at the age of 11, and the other two were 12 going on 13, and not a bother on them. Yeah. Happy cats. They've lived good lives. Yeah. When they would have been cats that were just out on the street. They were born to a stray cat out and about. And our boy that we have here, obviously, is a rescue. He was found in an abandoned home with eight other cats. Was it eight kittens and two adult females, I think?
Probably, yeah.
Several of the other cats have severe health issues. He's got scars on his face that we don't know who or what attacked him when he was very young. So when he was first rescued, he had to have surgery on his eye and on, you know, and here he is. He's, what is he now, five this year?
Yeah.
And he's in a loving home, and we adopted him because he was out there and he needed help.
I want to go cuddle him real bad. He'll hate it, so I'm not gonna do it.
He's a very anxious little boy.
Yeah, I saw him staring at us through the gap in the gap in the window just before.
Kids listening at home, if you have a dog or a cat or another pet, just give them a cuddle.
Yeah.
Just think about how lucky they are to have you.
And if you don't, just every time you go past a place that adopts animals and doesn't sell them, you might be able to, if you're listening to this, you can probably Google stuff. Find a place that has pets available for adoption in your area, and just send that email to Santa with that.
No, Santa doesn't do animals. But I will say...
What are you talking... Isn't it Christmas time?
Yeah, Jim Deere buys her for Darling. Santa doesn't give it to her. Santa can't give you animals. He can't bring those on the sleigh from the North Pole. Don't be putting ideas in their head. But here's the thing. If you
Krampus will throw wolves at you, though.
Yeah, true. If you want a pet and you can't have a pet, whether that's because, you know, you can't afford the pet, or you you don't have the space for it in your home, or whatever the reason is, a lot of these places, especially ones with dogs that are rescuing dogs, that are trying to look after dogs who are looking for a home, are always looking for volunteers. And even if you're quite young, normally they need someone to walk dogs.
Yeah, that's true.
You can. I have gone to shelters and I have walked dogs.
There was a open day recently for, I think it was I was going to say winter dogs, but that's not technically a genre.
It is. Yeah, winter dogs.
And I think one of the items they had was like getting pulled on a sled.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've been to a rescue event it's a Shamrock is what they're called, Siberian Husky Alaskan Malamute Rescue of Queensland. Maybe it's Shamrock with a Q. It was in Queensland anyway, in Australia. I think that's what it was, and it was and what was fun was you could bring your dog. So they invited anyone who had rescued dogs from this organization. So the dog I was living with at the time, who we've talked about in another episode recently, was rescued from that organization. And you could bring your rescue husky, your rescue Malamute, or husky Malamute mix, or I think there were some Samoyeds, so like winter dogs.
Yeah.
You could bring your dog along, and one of the events you could do there was you could do a sleigh thing where you get tie your dog to the sleigh and get them to run. But what was really funny was it was in just outside of Brisbane, I think, in Queensland, and the funniest thing was that there was obviously, you know, dogs were out running around, having a fun time, playing with each other, you know, making noises, doing the sled thing. But then there was like crowds of them lying down in the shade under trees. And every now and then they would just, one of them would start howling and then all of them would start howling, which is very funny. But yeah, you could bring, like, if I wanted to, I could have asked, you know, brought Lulu over and be like, okay, let's attach Lulu up and get her to pull me in a sled.
Yeah.
And I think she would have looked at me like, am I your slave?
you bring me treats and make me chocolate cupcakes.
But anyway, you can, see if there's a local rescue who needs someone to walk dogs and you can go and help walk dogs. And, because they do, like, they normally have so many dogs that they'll walk in a big group anyway. And I have definitely gone to rescue places and helped to just, sometimes they organize just a dog walk. I know the SPCA here in Wellington does they did one recently, I think, just walking along the waterfront with all their, rescue. Yeah. And it raises awareness for the, you know, their organization and lets people know what dogs are there to be adopted as well.
I do remember a long time ago, because I am an honest person.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember someone standing on the street corner with a dog and a sign and something, and it was some form of donation thing.
Yeah.
And I put a coin into the plastic bucket.
Yeah.
And the person was like, oh, thank you for donating. And I was like, I'm not donating. I'm paying to pet the dog. And I petted the dog. That is why I'm here. This is a toll to pet the dog.
Yeah, this is a transaction here. My
life is transactional. I am paying you money and I am petting the dog now.
Pay you to pet the dog.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how cat cafes work, especially 100%. Ones where you can adopt the cats from it.
Which is where we got Strider.
Yeah, we got Strider from a cat cafe. And it is that you pay in to spend time with the cats, so you're getting that out of it, but also the money that you're spending is going towards looking after those cats and also helping to support rescue organizations, local rescue organizations, to actually go out and rescue cats, you know?
Especially when, you have a pre-established organization for the people we adopted Strider off. They were just some people we knew, legitimately. You were on the wall at one point, right?
Yeah. I they did, a crowdfunding to open their cat cafe in the first place back in 2017 or so. And I want to go to a cat cafe. Yeah. And I donated enough that my name was on the wall in their old building. I don't think they kept those one. They did a new crowdfunding campaign for it.
They also used to use a lot of your photos. And which helped a lot with the
and I've done adoption. I have done that for other organizations as well. Because, I've, for places like that where they want to get people to come to see the animals that they have.
Yeah.
It is invaluable to them to have these really good photos of, not to toot my own horn, really good photos, but
award-winning photos.
I mean, I took photos of some cats in a cat cafe in Brisbane, and one of those photos ended up in a publication in Japan. telling people about what they could do in Brisbane. It's like, oh, go check out, and it was using my photo in this Nichigo Press. Bizarre, but I did do it in Ireland as well. I went to a rescue place and took pictures. I also volunteered for Serve the City, which was an organization that was kind of just doing things to help people in the city. So painting a house for someone who's disabled, or clearing out clutter from an old person's home that they couldn't move themselves, things like that. Just doing everyday practical things that people couldn't do.
Yeah.
And I volunteered to do that, but I also volunteered to take pictures of it happening so that they could share that and say, hey, this is the kind of thing we're doing. And, they could look for more volunteers saying, this is the kind of work you'll be doing. And also, here's the impact of what we're doing. And it really does make a huge difference to small organizations who really need to get word out. if they have images of what's going on, and they don't always have, you know, the means to do that. They don't have a camera, or they don't have, you know, someone who's able to take the pictures. So,
and just professional photo editing software.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. So I do like, I like to try, if I, you know, if I can, I do like to try and use creative skills I have to help support organizations like that.
We are so far off the rails, I don't even think we're in the same...
Anyway, adopt, don't shop.
Yeah, I don't even think we're on the same type of train tracks.
Yeah.
I think we've pretty much, like, genuinely covered enough. because that's the main overarching plot of Lady and the Tramp. It's about a dog finding his forever home.
Yeah.
And people giving a stray a chance, and that's pretty much what we've talked about.
Yeah, there is. I was thinking about it, well, because I knew there was something else I wanted to talk about in the adopting point of things.
Yeah.
And it was that there's a little subplot in the remake as well of these two puppies that Tramp encounters. And when we first see Tramp, he's doing a bit of an Aladdin thing where he's, you know, stealing. He's doing the, you know, I gotta steal to eat, gotta eat to live, gotta steal to eat, otherwise we get along. And he, you know, steals some food for himself, and then he finds two puppies who are, and then, you know, and he says, he's quite honest with me. He's like, oh, look, I'll give it to you, but this cute act isn't going to work for long. You're going to grow up, and then you're not going to be cute anymore. And they're like, ha, score. You know, but it's these two scraggly puppies who are living on their own in the park while they're, you know, way too young to be out there by themselves. They've obviously, something has happened that's ended up with them alone out there. And then we see them again in the dog pound.
Yeah.
Because at that point they've been caught by the dog catcher and they're in the pound and they are adoptable because they're little puppies. And then we see them again at the end of the movie. And at the end of the movie, in the original, at the end of the movie, Lady and Tramp have had puppies.
Yeah.
In the remake, they don't because they don't want to support breeding.
Correct.
They want to support adoption. So instead what's happened is their next door neighbor who owns Jacques, the Scottish Terrier, has adopted the two puppies because Jim Deere and Darling adopted Tramp. The neighbor was inspired to go, I'm going to do that. I'm going to adopt some puppies or adopt, you know, dogs from the pound. And she adopts the two puppies. And, you know, and it's that message of, you know, if you are visibly doing this good thing, other people will see it and go, oh, I can do this good thing.
Yeah.
That's some good that I can put out into the world.
You got some trivia for us?
Yeah, I'm sure I do. So for the original, I've already said Walt Disney didn't want to include the spaghetti eating scene. Which is funny. Oh, a trivia for my own life, which is fun, is that I, when I was 21, I went to Las Vegas with my cousin. And one of the things we did, because I am not a person who partakes in a lot of the things people do at Las Vegas, was we were staying in the Venetian Hotel with our uncle. And the hotels in Vegas are all, like, based on different things. And, like, there is a Paris hotel that, like, inside it's always nighttime, it's always Paris. Like, it's set up like the streets of Paris. And the Venetian Hotel is Venice. And as a result, there are canals in the hotel. And you can go on a gondola ride. And we went on a gondola ride inside, in a canal inside the hotel. And the gondoliers sing songs to you. And our gondolier, with no prompting, decided to sing Bella Notte. And we were both Disney fans. So we were both very excited about it.
Because this is a kid-friendly episode, I had to bite my tongue. But anyway, let's move on.
So, yeah, we talked about Joe Grant. So he approached Walt Disney in 1937 with sketches he'd made of his Springer Spaniel, whose name was Lady. Disney liked the sketches and told him to put it in the storyboard, but then when he did storyboard, Disney was like, nah, I don't like that. And then he read the Cosmopolitan story by Ward Green, and then he bought the rights to it, and then after he left the studio, his spaniel drawings were on Earth, and people started to put together the plot of the movie based on that. It is the first feature-length animated movie to be made in a widescreen format. It was made simultaneously in widescreen CinemaScope and in a standard Academy ratio version. It's also the widest film that Disney has ever created because future widescreen films were in a different widescreen ratio.
Yeah.
During the zoo scene, I just thought this was funny. During the zoo scene, the policeman is humming a tune called The Rising of the Moon, which was an 18th century Irish revolutionary ballad about Irish rebels secretly gathering to fight the British. So I thought that was funny. Also, I don't think I took it down, but the dog catcher, every time the dog catcher is whistling or humming in the original one, he's, I think the song is Where Did My Little Dog Go? Is the song that he's doing. So it's a fun little bonuses in what they're singing. The opening scene where Jim Deere gives Lady to Darling in the hat box was based on something Walt Disney actually did in his real life. He forgot a dinner date with his wife, and to make it up for her, he gave her a puppy in a hat box.
Fair enough.
Also, so this one's fun. So then we didn't talk about it very much, but the movies are set in like the early 1900s. There is a calendar at one point. So they apparently said that it was supposed to be set around 1905, but the calendar is consistent with either being 1901 or 1912 when the movie begins, the Christmas scene. And something about that time period is that meatballs did not exist in Italy at that time. and now meatballs did exist in the United States before they existed in Italy.
Yeah.
Pork was very expensive and hard to get for Italians. So it wasn't until Italian immigrants came to America where meat was cheaper that they were able to add meatballs to their spaghetti and sauce. But based on the timing of it, Tony and Joe would have been one of the first restaurateurs to ever use meatballs in America if they were real people, which I think is funny. Also worth noting, this isn't trivia, but just because we haven't discussed it, that, like you said, they do keep the time period in the remake, but they have really made an idealized version of the time.
It was very much, the whole mixed race couples thing in the South.
In the 1910s, whatever. It's interesting because I've seen a lot of criticism for it online being like, oh, you know, they're making it woke or whatever. But here's how I'd like to think of it. There's a TV show, and the name is going to sound rude, but I promise you it's not spelled in the rude way. There's a TV show called Schitt's Creek, which is about a rich family who lose all their money and then realize that the only thing they haven't lost is that they own a town in the middle of nowhere. They're kind of horrible people at the beginning, but they grow to become really good people. They have a lot of potential to be good people.
Sure.
But one of the overarching things in it is, and people ask about it a lot in interviews and things, is that one of the main characters is pansexual.
Yeah.
He is attracted to people of all genders, regardless of their gender. The gender doesn't factor into it. And people ask Dan Levy, who wrote it and plays that character, why do they not ever have a storyline about homophobia? Why do they not have people who hate him or discriminate against him because of who he is? And he basically said, there's enough of that in real life. Why would I want to put it into this TV show?
Yeah.
Like, these people live in a world where that's not a problem, and I don't want to introduce it as a problem. And I think that's how I view this movie. That they have, they have created a version of a 1910s America where racism just wasn't a problem. Where sexism also isn't a problem. Because I think it's implied that Darling is the bread maker, kind of, because Jim Deere is a failed musician or whatever. So they have created this idealized version where those things just aren't a problem. And I think that's nice, especially in a kid's film.
Yeah.
Like, just let us have a happy world. We see it. There's enough horrible things happening in our real world that we don't need to be putting that into this, you know, cute little escapism film.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's not trivia. I just wanted to say that.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think I've talked about everything for the original. I don't think I took many notes in terms of trivia for the remake. And I have already talked about them because I said that several of the dog actors were rescues and that each one was adopted before the film was completed. This is kind of trivia, but like it's just part of the film, which is that the lyrics to He's a Tramp were changed. Because in the original, the song describes Tramp as a ladies' man, and that's kind of how he's portrayed. But in the remake, he's more of a loner, and it's all about him wanting to be free and alone. And that's, you know, and in both cases, he does kind of change his tune when he meets Lady and when he actually spends time with her and you know, starts to have feelings for her. It's also, this was the first of Disney's live-action remakes that debuted on Disney Plus rather than in cinemas.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah. And the only other bit of trivia I had here was that the riverboat that they go on is called the Monty Rose, and the dogs that played Tramp and Lady are Monty and Rose, which is cute. So they named the boat after the dog actors.
That's cool.
Yeah. That's kind of all the trivia I had.
Fair enough.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
You did mention that I would bring up CGI, and I haven't done it.
Oh, yeah.
as you said, they were adopted for the production. The dog actors do a great job. Most of the time CGI is used when dogs come involved is because dogs always think they're playing and having a great time when they're actors.
Yeah.
And most of the time CGI is used to stop the tails from wagging, especially when they're doing...
I was going to say, that was something I wanted to talk about in the 101 Dalmatians episode, and I forgot to talk about it. Yeah. It's just that there's, like, the moment where, like, Pongo is consoling Perdita when the puppies are gone, and you can, and they've tried to angle the camera so you can't see, but his tail is clearly wagging.
Yeah. It is one of the very heartful things about dogs is even when they're having a bad day, they're having a great day doing it.
Yeah. But also when they're acting, you know, they're the whole time they're like, I'm doing a good job being a good actor. Yeah, so their tail is going. That's why it's hard because they hire Malamutes to be wolves in movies. Yeah, yeah. They always have to CGI their tails because the Malamutes are like, look at me, I'm being a great scary wolf.
Yeah, yeah. The CGI that they changed is mainly in the faces. Yeah. And I could quote Jaws, but obviously for the age group that this movie's aimed at, I don't think you should have seen Jaws by now. It's very much like a doll's eyes.
Mm.
That's all I could think is that, like, in animation, you animate the face tells the story. Now you know what's happening in the rest of the movie because it's on played on the actor's face.
Yeah.
I think Babe did a bit of better job.
Yeah.
And I think... it wasn't peanut butter. They were using something to make the animals look like they were talking, right? Was it peanut butter?
Yeah, I think peanut butter.
And Lady and the Tramp in the 2019 one, they was just like, oh, well, it's just like CGI the entire thing. And
yeah.
The eyes are the part where it's missing because, what? Like, you look into the eyes of your pet.
Yeah.
And you may see, like, the infinites of the universe or a singular neuron bouncing back and forth like a ping pong ball. But you see something in there.
Yeah.
And I feel like with the animal eyes, it had a very much like a Polar Express moment.
I was going to say.
They have the dead eyes.
It's Uncanny Valley because it's obvious that it's not just showing the dog's actual eyes. I think they should have gone one of two ways. They either should have, I mean, I understand that they're CGing the mouth.
Yeah.
They either should have left the eyes alone. And risk, you know, and just don't care about the fact that the dog is probably looking around doing, whatever. Or they should have made it more cartoonish.
Yeah.
Because what they've done is they've taken away the soul of the dog by doing these eyes, but they also haven't made those eyes expressive. They've just made them beady.
Yeah.
So, like, they could have given them very cartoonish. They could have, like, you know, emphasized it, make it more cartoonish. And then you'd be like, okay, they've kind of blended this into an animation thing. But instead, it's a bit lacking. Because it's definitely Uncanny Valley territory. Your brain knows that there's something wrong with it. Even if you're not sure what it is, you look at it and your brain goes, there's something off about that dog. And that takes away from the movie a little bit.
I think, like, for all the grief I gave it, I feel like maybe the live-action Lion King got it a little bit better, but was... because a lot of these came out in 2019.
Yeah.
It was like a shotgun effect of just like, let's just remake everything. Yeah.
But also the live-action Lion King, they were not... It wasn't live-action. It was
live-action. They were entirely CGI.
It was entirely CGI. Whereas in this, they've taken real dogs and then just take... It's like they put a mask on them.
Yeah, yeah.
But they haven't... That's the problem, is they haven't cartoonized them.
They just sort of...
They just made them look dead in the eyes.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the biggest takeaway.
Yeah.
From the CGI.
I'm sure someone out there has done a fixed version of it where they've made them look better.
I was going to mention the fixed version of Scorpion King, but that's kind of irrelevant at this point.
Because
the demographic this movie's aimed at is probably never seen Scorpion King either. Or The Mummy. Ooh, that's a movie we haven't watched. Have we watched that together?
Yeah, we've watched The Mummy together.
Is the Tom Cruise one on our list?
I have not seen the Tom Cruise one.
Is it on our list, though?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it's actually a remake, right? I think it's a different plot.
Yeah, it's a different plot, but it's still The Mummy.
Anyway.
If you've liked what you've heard today, please share this episode with someone you know who adopted a pet, or has talked about pets, or has seen pets in other places. Just anybody who's been around animals whatsoever. And in our footnotes, you can find the link to our website, ittakes2.co.nz, where you can join our mailing list and join our Discord. That is all I have to say.
Yeah, thank you so many very calls much
to action
for listening to us. This is our last Disney episode of the year. We condense our Disney remakes into the period normally between my birthday and Nick's birthday. So all of our Disney remake episodes should be between February and May, every year. And, so we won't be doing another Disney remake episode till around this time next year, but, there possibly will be more child friendly episode in the meantime. I can't remember.
It's a big list. Thank you again for joining us. Share with some friends. Hit like if that's available. Drop us a review. Anything. Or just, hit skip to the next episode. I don't care.
All right. We'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.